revolutionary with the music, but we're gonna keep the music revolutionary. It's Voices from the Edge. I am John Slaughter. I'm gonna let you know, hey, make sure you tune in next week. I got a couple of shows left, but make sure you keep tuning in to Community Radio. KBU does a great job of allowing people like me to have a platform to come and share the voice. Hey, I'm John Slaughter. You didn't get no poetry today, but you'll get some next Thursday. This is Voices from the Edge. We want to thank KBU Radio. Hey, next time, hey, we'll get more calls in, but it's 503-231-8187. Make sure you call into KBU and get those voices heard. Voices from the Edge, John Slaughter. I will see you next Thursday. You have a beautiful day. Enjoy that sun. Make sure you enjoy the eclipse and be safe. Hey, John Slaughter, PJ, have a great day. Rah!
I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a
good morning. It's 9 o'clock and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And coming up, Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Fight the Empire returns with a historic tale of the San Patricio Battalion, the Irish soldiers who switched sides in U.S. war against Mexico. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks to author Yanara Friedland about her book Uncountry, a mythology, a poetic reimagining of myth. KBU keeps you informed and involved, and we need your love. Go to kbu.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 19th and Sunday, August 20th at Portland Metro Arts in Portland. The Montevilla Jazz Festival is a two-day festival that showcases the very best in original Portland jazz. The 2017 festival will host 12 performances over 2 days, featuring the Blue Cranes, Rebecca Kilgore, and is headlined by Portland's own Essiet Essiet. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 19th, and Sunday, August 20th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBU program is made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Sound of the balalaika. It's time for Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. So much to talk about today, and I want to start with something that came up at the last moment. It's scarcely believable, but it's from the Washington Post, of all places, and it's titled, Trump mourns loss of, quote, beautiful statues and monuments, end quote, in wake of Charlottesville rally over Robert E. Lee statue. And David Nakamura writes, President Trump on Thursday, today mourned the loss of, quote, beautiful statues and monuments, end quote, in the wake of the violent clashes in Charlottesville during a white supremacist demonstration protesting the planned removal of a statue depicting Confederate military commander Robert E. Lee. Trump's string of morning tweets made clear the president was not willing to back down over his claims Tuesday that some of the demonstrators had legitimate grievances over the loss of Southern history and that both sides were to blame in the mayhem that left a woman dead and at least 19 more injured. Trump made those claims a day after he had belatedly condemned the neo-Nazi and Ku Klux Klan groups that organized the Unite the Right rally. Politicians from both parties have criticized the president for inflaming racial tensions and failing to provide clear moral leadership for the nation. And there's much more to that article there in the Washington Post. And I'll be having some more to say about that in just a moment. I have some headlines I would like to pass along first, and then we'll be talking about that. And I'll give you the number now if you want to call in, 503-231-8187, if you want to get in line. President Moon Jae-in of South Korea on Tuesday sent a warning to hawkish U.S. officials that only South Korea can decide regarding any military action against North Korea. Speaking out at a ceremony marking the 72nd anniversary of liberation from Japanese occupation, President Moon said, quote, "War must never break out again on the peninsula. Without the consent of South Korea, no country can determine to take military action," end quote. This is from Chosun Ilbo, Korean publication. And describing the North Korean nuclear threat as the biggest challenge facing South Korea, Moon said his government will work closely with the U.S. to resolve the security crisis. Quote, "The government will do all it can to prevent a war from breaking out. No matter what twists and turns we suffer, the North Korea nuclear problem must be addressed in a peaceful manner," end quote. He urged North Korea to halt all provocations immediately and return to the dialogue table. He pledged to assist the North in the process and promised South Korea's allies will do the same. Quoting President Moon again, "Let me make it clear. We do not want North Korea to collapse. We will neither pursue reunification by absorbing the North, nor in an artificial way." And he added that any integration needs to be carried out in a peaceful and democratic manner to which each and every Korean agrees. And then turning to the Korea Herald, also an English language publication from Korea, "The United States will hold joint military exercises with South Korea next week, regardless of North Korea's opposition to them," according to the State Department. Heather Nauert, a department spokeswoman, reaffirmed that the computer-based drills will kick off in South Korea Monday, despite recent tensions over the North's nuclear and missile programs. Quoting Nauert, "We will continue to conduct joint military exercises," end quote. She went further to reject calls for a so-called double freeze or the suspension of the exercises in exchange for a stop to North Korea's provocations. That idea was recently floated by China and Russia. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The Centers for Disease Control in their updated 2017 report say that Aldrin, Dieldrin, Indrin, heptachlor epoxide, oxychlorodyne, dioxin, polychlorinated biphenyls, DDT, DEE, hexachlorobenzene, Mirax, and polybrominated diphenyl, and 800 other chemicals are in your bloodstream. Don't get mad, though, if you get cancer or if you find yourself to be sterile. The corporations like Monsanto and DuPont, who make this sort of thing, are sure that it's your fault and not theirs, probably that time you tried a cigar in ninth grade. Turning to the environment, pardon me, in a surprising finding, NASA released data Tuesday showing that July 2017 is tied for the warmest such month on record, statistically deadlocked with July 2016. This means that July was one of the warmest months the planet has seen in 137 years of record keeping, comparable to July and August 2016, which tied for the record for the warmest month overall. What makes this year's July record noteworthy, Andrew Friedman writes in Mashable, is that it occurred in the absence of a natural climate cycle like El Nino, which would help heighten global average surface temperatures. A strong El Nino, combined with human-caused global warming, helped push 2016 to claim the record for the warmest year since reliable thermometer records began in 1880. In addition, the finding comes during a summer in which large parts of the Arctic have seen below average temperatures, bucking the recent sharp warming trend there. Critics of NASA's temperature data sometimes argue that Arctic warming skews the agency's figures, so they are biased as too high. And speaking for myself, despite everything, this is getting worse and worse. From the Missoulian, Dateline Helena, Montana's firefighting fund could run out by the end of the week, as the state's budget director acknowledged Wednesday, forcing officials to draw money from emergency reserves to keep crews and equipment on the front lines of the worst collection of wildfires in the U.S. More than $168.5 million of mostly federal money as of Wednesday was spent battling about 1,400 fires, big and small, that have charred 780 square miles statewide. According to the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, the largest of the fires currently burning in the Lolo National Forest was less than half contained, with full containment not expected until October. The state has spent $29 million in resources so far during the current fire season. With more than $500,000 being spent daily on battling wildfires, that means it'll be just a matter of days when the $2.5 million left in the fire fund is fully depleted. Continuing with climate change news from The Guardian in the UK, forest fires have cut off a village of 2,000 people in Portugal as firefighters struggle to control two large blazes in the center of the country. Vasco Estrela, the mayor of Machau Village, told Lusa news agency it's impossible to leave or enter Machau because of the flames and the smoke. The blaze erupted on Tuesday evening, and by Thursday morning it had surrounded the village. He said it is continuing unabated. A large fire destroyed 80 to 90% of the village at the end of July. As Estrela pointed out, rescuers had evacuated about 130 people from nearby villages. Emergency teams were particularly worried about the advancing fires around Machau, and they hoped that firefighting aircraft, which could not be used at night, would tip the balance in their favor today. Continuing with climate disaster news, from news.trust.org, all glaciers in Iceland are retreating at an unprecedented pace. That's a quote of Odor Sigurdsson, a geologist at the Icelandic Meteorological Office who has studied them for 30 years. Close to 10 glaciers with names, as well as many unnamed ones, have already disappeared. And he told that to the Thomson Reuters Foundation, whose news site this is, news.trust.org. Their demise heralds profound shifts in Iceland's weather patterns, water flows, flora and fauna, volcanic activity, and land mass, according to the Icelandic Meteorological Office. Now, speaking for myself, that's probably brought up because of this phenomena that has been discovered in recent years when glaciers and ice masses are reduced, volcanic activity becomes more active, earthquake activity becomes more active because of the shift of weight. Returning to the article, Iceland is becoming greener and some of its land mass is rising as climate change gathers pace. Scientists say that will bring economic and other consequences, but for many Icelanders who like to call their nation the land of fire and ice as a tribute to the glaciers and volcanoes that forged its stunning otherworldly landscape, the loss of their glaciers is deeply personal. Quoting Agnes Gunnarsdóttir, the CEO of Perlin Museum in the capital Reykjavik, just seeing them disappearing is very heartbreaking. Reykjavik is holding a state-of-the-art exhibition on glaciers and ice caves in a bid to educate tourists and residents about the impact of climate change on the environment. Gunnarsdóttir remembers visiting her grandparents' home in the countryside when the glacier of Vatnajökull was much larger. Quote, "We are seeing this in our lifetime. It's changing so quickly. It's very scary," end quote. Now, climate disaster news from Southern Oregon from the News Review. A thick layer of haze from nearby wildfires settled in the Umpqua Valley on Wednesday morning. The Department of Environmental Quality issued an air quality alert for the Umpqua Valley Wednesday afternoon after the agency's air quality index showed unhealthy levels of smoke particles in the air. As of noon on Wednesday, the air quality index, which monitors the level of air pollution throughout the state, surpassed 151, pushing Roseburg into the unhealthy level. The level is rated in terms of particulate matter in micrograms per cubic meter or particle pollution like smoke or fumes. This unhealthy level depicted in red means everyone may begin to experience health effects, while those who are particularly sensitive may experience more serious health effects. A level of 301 to 500, they write, is considered hazardous. Now, speaking for myself, I have read that a much lower level is considered hazardous, so I'm not sure why they're writing that. But returning to the article, as of 7 p.m., Roseburg has dropped back to the moderate level. Emily Veal, fire information officer for the Umpqua National Forest, said the smoke came from several fires surrounding the Douglas County area, including those in the Falcon Complex and the Tiller Ranger District of the forest, the Umpqua North Complex, as well as fires in the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest and the Willamette National Forest. Quoting Veal, Roseburg is situated in that bowl area, so if we have changes in the weather or inversions, it can really hold the smoke down on the valley floor. When you're going up closer to the Diamond Lake area, it's going to go through waves of being smoky, especially when we get easterly winds pushing the smoke, end quote. So something to consider if you are traveling for the eclipse, which of course is Monday. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland now. I started off talking about Trump's statement this morning, mourning the loss of beautiful statues and monuments in the wake of the Charlottesville rally. He's so concerned about those beautiful statues. And if I were writing this online instead of saying it on the microphone, I would put stroke sarcasm. Returning to Nakamura's article, some white supremacist leaders, including David Duke, the former Klan Grand Wizard, have praised Trump for his honesty and courage. During his remarks Tuesday and again in his weeks Thursday, in his tweets Thursday, Trump argued that Lee and fellow Confederate General Stonewall Jackson, who commanded Southern forces in the Civil War to secede from the United States, are important and admired historical figures in the South. He said they could be equated to founding fathers George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, who owned slaves and thus could potentially be subject to a modern-day backlash that would tarnish their legacies. So, where do you start with that? I'm going to leave it up to you. You can call in 503-231-8187. Number to call, 503 area code. 231-8187. I want to talk about Antifa, anti-fascist activists. I like the memes that have showed up online that show U.S. soldiers disembarking on the D-Day beaches from landing craft with their helmets and uniforms and rifles, with a meme saying to something to the effect of anti-fascists activists arrived to dispel a large gathering of Nazis. About Antifa, the threat they are opposing is a violent reality. And it is more violent and more of a reality for people of color, for transgender people like me. It should not be hard to make this case, given the fact that there are torch-bearing racists marching in the streets, identifying as Nazis and Klansmen, bearing weapons. Nazis and Klansmen, of course, are both known historic bloody terrorist organizations. But they're white, and so we don't call them terrorist organizations. And I've said that before. It just needs to be said again, I guess, until it impinges on more brains. These are terrorist organizations who get a pass. The Klan is a terrorist organization. The Nazis are a terrorist organization. And as much as I admire the ACLU, I believe they are quite wrong to devote any of their resources to defending the so-called free speech of the Nazis and the Klan. Now, you could go slightly less to the right, or you can be anyone, and you can say what you want around me or anyone else. You can say it in mass, but as soon as you start calling yourself the Nazis, then you're saying that you are inclined to and are threatening to go about where you are not noticed or where you will not be punished and killed. And that's the same for a Klansman. These are murdering terrorist organizations. They should not be tolerated at all. If they were not white, if they were ISIS, if they were Kurdish and were not fighting on the sides of the United States, they came to the United States and did the bombing and the shooting that they do, they would be called terrorist organizations and they would not be tolerated. They would be arrested for their bombing and for their shooting. The abortion bombers are very much allied with and entangled with Nazis and Klan. And the anti-abortion, the debate is a debate, but the anti-abortion activists who set bombs are certainly terrorists. They intend to spread terror. They are trying to get their way politically by bloodshed and fear. So, in this post-Trumpian degenerate United States. There are many who cheer Trump's insinuation that leftists fighting Nazis are the immoral equivalent of Nazis. Probably, if you're listening to this community radio station in your car or on the web, you agree with me that there is no comparison between the promoters of vicious racism and the defenders of egalitarianism. But there are millions in the red states who do not see a moral difference, who view their me-first ideology as pure and natural, as part of a zero-sum fight in which everyone is going for what they can get as hard as they can, and they just want theirs. The North Carolina legislature was forced by events in Charlottesville to give up in the last day or so on their snarky bill that would have given legal space to persons who drove into demonstrators at rallies. Of course, someone actually did drive into demonstrators at a rally, and the bill wouldn't have changed the law much. So PolitiFact has put out a rather misleading, I think, article saying that the bill wouldn't have caused that much damage. But the fact is, the bill was introduced in order to be inflammatory. The bill would have given an exception to purposeful injury, but its intent was clearly inflammatory. Right-wing hotheads across the nation took note and took comfort, and now we have 19 injured and one dead. Anti-fascism is a moral necessity. Anti-fascism is a moral necessity. This is particularly true here and now. The Antifa groups are very necessary. The racists like to wear a shirt. It shows a person being thrown out of a helicopter. This is one of their favorite shirts. You can see it in the videotapes. This is a reference to U.S. history in Vietnam when Operation Phoenix torturers would throw their victims overboard and threaten the next victim with the same treatment. The tactic was echoed in Pinochet's Chile, and we should remember that the CIA, the same CIA that was in Vietnam doing Operation Phoenix, that Henry Kissinger and the Chicago School of Economics were enthusiastically behind the anti-democratic U.S.-supported fascist coup in Chile on September 11th, 1973. The meaning of the helicopter shirt is this: fascism and its intimidating brutality is here and should be incorporated into everyday governance for the benefit of these same shouting jugheads. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Fascism can happen here because fascism has been here for a long time, though it has been forced out of public view. As I said, there was enthusiastic support in Washington for Pinochet's coup. Certainly our Jim Crow police state and its mass incarceration is a form of racist fascism. It's not polite or politically viable yet to acknowledge among whites that the U.S. is a racist, fascist, imperialist, corporate-controlled police state, but here we are. You know as well as I do that we all have to fear the police now. And here in Portland, they've made it clear by their actions and inactions that they are on the side of the alt-Reich. In the White House, we have smirking racists like Bannon and Miller and Trump, and the fact that they deny that they are racist means exactly nothing. So here we are. The racist militias show up to demonstrators, show up to demonstrations bearing firearms, not only recently downtown, but at the Malheur Ridge occupation and at Charlottesville. And that is an exception given to no one but white racist demonstrators. The Jim Crow cops are not going to attack them any more than they are going to attack their own police union headquarters. And by the way, at PortlandPoliceAssociation.com, you will find no condemnation of the armed militias who show up downtown to cause injury and mayhem on the streets. This is even true this week after the fascists have shown once again just how murderous they intend to be. A recent video on HBO's Vice streaming service follows the alt-right as they prepared for their deadly confrontation in Charlottesville this week. And one vignette shows a Nazi type, Christopher Cantwell, proudly removing no less than four guns from his body onto a hotel bed along with a knife. This sort of intimidation and armed violence is exactly what the Antifas have mobilized against. This man and his bonehead friends were allowed to rally all day with loaded weapons, obviously, by the same police who would violently attack a giant papier-mâché puppet on the pretext that it might be a bomb. It's silly to say that Antifa and racist marchers are equal. No, it's clueless and racist to say so. So naturally, Trump has said it. I'm grateful for the Antifa groups. I support their efforts. The terrorists they oppose cannot be countered by reason nor by law. So we have Antifa. See your Antifa recruiter today. The life you save may be your own. All of this is happening in the context of whiteness and white superiority, and the Klan and Nazis and alt-right are just a manifestation of that context. They are not exceptions to racism, but rather the clearest manifestation of whiteness. Whiteness is not a race, but a set of false ideas of normalcy, correctness, virtue, purity, and innocence applied to pale English speakers in this culture, applied to me. We profit from it. I profit from it. It depends for its existence more than anything else on not acknowledging it, not seeing it, processing it, speaking about it, and certainly not dealing with it. Whiteness really does boil down to just the false idea that some people are just better and more worthy. It is to be acted out and not to be spoken of, because then the spell is broken. And we see how wrong and arbitrary it is. This is the real crime of the alt-right. To the newspapers, the thing that makes them the object of scorn, that they say and act on this idea of whiteness and thus expose its falseness. Even they know on some level that the idea of white supremacy is a lie, so they seek to replace the former comforting silence on the issue with direct intimidation. And the police, who have always understood on a gut level that they are enforcing the unspeakable mandate of whiteness, stand quietly on the side of the murderers. Remember how the knife murderer on the Portland MAX train was allowed to finish his drink? Do you think the same courtesy would be extended to him were he not white? Now that we have the jackass racist Trump in power, those who dodged around the issue of race all their lives, and this includes white liberals, of course, must now confront the ugliness of white hierarchy as young, stupid white men demand its benefits. Status quo defending liberals must ask, how will whiteness survive now that it is out in the open? For the world to live, whiteness must die. And have a caller number to call 503-231-8187. Belinda's on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I missed the first couple minutes of your show, so you may have already covered this, but I just wanted to make sure. Slight change of subject, but as transgender people, I think we have this in common. There is an action today at 11:30 at the Bureau of Labor and Industries in Portland to get them to actually start providing some kind of protection from discrimination for employment for transgender people.
All right. And once again, where's that at?
I don't know the address, but it's Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. It's an office downtown. I believe it's in the state office building close to Lloyd Center. But people should Google it, because I didn't get around to it before I called.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in then.
Oh, and by the way, one other thing. You were talking about how these idiots want to go after transgender people and, you know, LGBT, you know, everybody, as well as just people of color. I'm sure you noticed we had this report of the 17th known murder of a transgender woman just a couple days ago.
And I believe they're all women of color.
No, the last one was not, but the preponderance is. No question.
Preponderance, vast disproportion. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Number to call, 503-231-8187. Pam's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa. How are you doing today?
Doing well, and you?
Well, I'm okay. I just wanted to make one comment. Although I think hatred is a moral, spiritual failing, I do hate fascism, whether they be KKK, Nazis, or, you know, a lot of our cops. But I will never use fascist tactics, and I wish that no one else would either. You know, I don't think that's a good way to fight them.
What fascist tactic is being used to fight them?
Well, like beating other people up. I mean, it does happen.
When you beat people who approach you with guns, is that a fascist tactic?
Yeah.
I mean, call that self-defense. I don't call that a fascist tactic.
Okay, call it self-defense. But I think that the self-defense argument is used very often to create more anger and hatred than solve it or soothe it. Or
it certainly is abused. I am not a pacifist. But I think that one should. I think that one should turn to peaceful tactics wherever possible, and Nazis and Klans make that impossible.
Okie doke. Well, I'll have to show up at the next gizmo and check that out. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in
on the show. Take care. Bye bye.
Number to call 503-231-8187. Coming up this morning at 9:30. Fight the Empire returns with a historic tale of the San Patricio Battalion, the Irish soldiers who switched sides in the U.S. war against Mexico. In the 1850s at 10, it's Air Cascadia, 10:15 Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. also known as Dennis Bernstein, at 11 Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks to author Yanara Friedland about her book, Uncountry, A Mythology, A Poetic Reimagining of Myth. You've been listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM on KBOO.FM, where you can contribute right now by clicking that button, KBOO.FM, where we go out to you and to all the ships at sea. Stay tuned, because Pairfoggering is coming in.
Hey, on Friday, August 18th, Portland Resistance will be holding a peaceful rally and march in solidarity with the community of Charlottesville, Virginia. Friday's action is important. This situation is serious, really serious. So Friday, August 18th at 5:30 p.m. That's Friday, August 18th at 5:30 p.m. The Salmon Street Fountain by the river.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. Always a good day to fight the Empire. We're going to go back to the year of 1845. All across the Irish countryside, people were starving at the same time as the English landlords were exporting crops. So you can see